We begin with Hussein Rashid, professor of religion at Hofstra University, who will tackle whether Muslims or liberalism are suddenly under siege in light of the latest events. Professor, welcome back to The Takeaway.
Thank you for having me, John.
You know, it's always nice to talk to you at moments like this. I'm wondering if there's anything about the response or the coverage or just the events themselves which hasn't been spoken that you would love to speak about.
Well, I'm sorry we always get together in moments like this.
Right.
I think for me, one of the things that has been coming up in the coverage of what's happening in Paris is that this is about these cartoons that Charlie Hebdo published several years ago and has been publishing in various dribs and drabs. I think this misreads the situation as to what's really happening in Paris with the minority communities generally and the Muslim communities specifically. The Paris community or French societies had a very hard time integrating its minorities, whether they're Muslim, Jewish, Black, that there's a sense that they don't know how to integrate them. And Nicolas Sarkozy, the former prime minister, during his tenure as interior minister, once called the minorities of France scum. That's not actually a sign for really engaging with people. And so I think we have to understand what these Kouachi brothers are doing is in a broader context of lack of integration into French society, that the cartoons are a convenient excuse to go kill people. And really, it is a type of extended gang mentality where they're looking for power and respect at the end of a gun.
Do you think this will give it to them? I mean, the response has been uniformly in solidarity with the journalists of Charlie Hebdo and the idea of the liberal tradition in Europe. The Economist even pushed out a very emotional cover, in the midst of all of this. Do you think that the response will diminish the sense that Muslims are outraged or in any sense are feeling under siege by the kind of immigrant, anti-immigrant mentality that you've described?
I think that insofar as what will happen in France, what I fear will happen in France is that there will be an official and popular backlash against the Muslim community writ large. Remember, these were guys who were in prison, were already tried for terrorism charges, and carried this out. So it's not like the state apparatus didn't know about them. But I think what the backlash will be is it will further marginalize the Muslim communities of France and will make them more rich recruiting grounds for people like Ben Yatta, the radical imam who supposedly got the Kouachi brothers involved in these activities.
What do you think the profile is of an individual who would want to get involved in something like this?
I think it's very hard to come up with a general profile, but I think when we look at the Kouachi brothers, I think they represent a specific type. These were guys who lost their parents at a very young age, didn't feel like they belonged anywhere, were looking for acceptance and belonging, and they found a charismatic guy, a Charlie Manson type figure, I think we've talked about this before, who brought them into a fold and said, I love you, now go and kill for me. It's a very cultic-like atmosphere, and I think we see the same thing happening, for example, with the surviving Sarnai brothers on trial this week in Boston, that these were young men who were lost, looking for a sense of belonging. It's typical gang initiation pattern with bigger guns and more violent ideology.
Would you say it's fueled by the difficult economy in Europe right now?
I think the economy plays a role. I don't think we can discount the ways in which there's a lack of cultural integration. And I don't think we can discount the rhetoric of the West at war with Islam that's coming out of some of these preachers and the situation in Iraq, in Syria, in Egypt. I think we have to see this as all part of a bigger complex.
You know, the free speech debate in the United States centered mostly around pornography, not about these anti-religious images. But I do recall that when the Supreme Court case of Larry Flint and Hustler made it to the Supreme Court, all of a sudden there was this need to recognize that this provocative element of free speech existed. And years after that, it's almost as though it has no fangs anymore. There's no sense of offense about Larry Flint. He's just sort of this tolerable figure out there, and there's, you know, a whole porn world that's out there. But I'm wondering if the ultimate impact of this would be to reduce the provocative nature of cartoonists like this, that as Europe recognizes what tolerance is all about, the inflammatory nature of these kinds of images diminishes.
And I think you bring up a really good point. I am a near free speech absolutist. I think people should have the right to do or say anything as offensive as they want to, and the appropriate response is more speech. This is very much part of the American John Stuart Mill informed tradition. What I think we miss here is that just because you have the right and the ability to do something doesn't mean that you are operating in a vacuum. And I'm not talking about self-censorship here. What I'm talking about is there's certain things that we do or don't do out of respect for other people. And I think satire, I don't think any religion should be off limits, including Islam. I think satire is a perfectly legitimate tool to respond to power, to respond to stupidity. I've argued that one of the best tools we have against fighting ISIS is to mock them and to satirize them. I think what we see often, though, is that under the rhetoric of free speech and satire, we see bullying of oppressed and marginalized communities. And I think Hebdo mixed those lines.
How do you tell the difference? I mean, the tradition of not depicting the prophet is a tradition that's not well understood by non-Muslims, but it is there, and it is a button that Charlie Hebdo understands that it can push. How should we understand this doctrine of non-depiction of the prophet and blasphemy associated with imagery?
So I think these are two interrelated points. If we talk about the difference between satire and bullying, it's about understanding who your audience is and who you're going after. We look at the Sambo comic tradition in America. We would never run those things
Little
now.
Little Black Sambo.
Little Black Sambo.
Right.
We would never run those things now, right? Because we are aware of a population that is not subservient to us anymore. We treat blacks as people in this country now in a way that
– Well, depends on who you talk to.
Who you talk to. But I mean, there's a certain awareness, a certain empathy that's there now that wasn't when these cartoons first ran. So I think part of it is building this empathy and this knowledge. And so when we talk about depictions of Muhammad, I think we have to have some of that conversation as well. There is a long tradition in Muslim societies of presenting Prophet Muhammad through figural representation. You see this in the Persian miniature tradition, in the Mughal miniature tradition, in the Turkish miniature tradition. You can go to almost any major museum in the world, including the Louvre, and see depictions, devotional pictures of Muhammad represented. So while Muhammad is never represented inside a mosque space, you will see people carrying around images of Muhammad and other saintly figures, holy figures, that bring them blessings and luck. So it's
so
not
what do you say about the Saudis who try to enforce a kind of strict doctrinal purity about imagery? And they have a huge amount of credibility. They're the custodians of Mecca.
Yeah. And, you know, I think the Saudis are probably one of the biggest extremist gangs out there. And they have the advantage of having lots of oil money. They have a very puritanical ideology that involves bringing people in for hazing. They're going to flog somebody today for blogging, right? And it's about erasing history and culture so they can create this narrative that they are the new prophets of Islam. And the fact that they just happen to be sitting on the two holiest sites for Muslims gives them legitimacy that they would not otherwise have.
I wonder if we resolve this bullying versus censorship thing. Zbigniew Brzezinski was on television today screaming about it's not censorship, it's common sense. It's not censorship, it's common sense. As though common sense is a shared understanding. It really isn't. It's a product of liberalism. And if you're not liberal, your common sense is different. What are we going to do about that to get a more shared experience in Europe regarding what constitutes bullying and what constitutes free speech?
And I think you have hit on the exact right set of language. When we talk about the liberal tradition, particularly the American liberal tradition, it is about individual rights and individual autonomy working for the common good. And I think what we're seeing in the French notion of the liberal tradition is individual rights and individual desires trumping the common good. So when we talk about what's happening in France is that there's no sense that their immigrants and their minorities are part of French society and need to be considered as part of the common good as well. I think the liberal tradition in its most robust and fulfilled form involves bringing different parties together to negotiate difficulties together rather than in a top-down or marginalizing perspective.
Now, that's a really interesting distinction because while some would say, how can the Enlightenment be undone by two crazy guys holed up in Paris? But you would say, well, it's because France has not extended the Enlightenment to the immigrant communities, and so their marginalization is a symbol of how we need to spread this idea of liberalism around better.
I'm not even sure the French have adopted Enlightenment liberalism. I think they pay lip service to it, but I don't think it exists in practice in the country. And I think this is really one of the issues is that he can claim the language of the high ground but not the practice of the high ground. And I don't think it's just the responsibility of French society, right? I mean, I think the Kouachi brothers and the organizations that sponsored them don't think about the common good either. And I don't necessarily think that that's an Enlightenment concept. Muslim theological traditions have the idea of maslaha, or the common good, as well. And so even within the Muslim tradition, the Kouachi brothers are not part of that common good conversation. So.
Well, then let's put it back on Charlie Hebdo. What do they do? What purpose do they serve? This Michel Houellebecq, whose book is now published in France and will get much more attention than it ever got, you know, otherwise. The idea of Sharia law as a horrible, you know, toxin in humanity. He's making this point in his book. Is there a role for that?
I absolutely think so. I think there are ways to criticize. I think there are ways to question. I'm a scholar of the study of religion. What I do in my class is question a lot of these premises for Islam, for Judaism, for Christianity. That's what the role of a liberal intellectual tradition does. But there are also ways in which we present it as really being questioning and saying, what is the role of Islam in French society versus Muslims are going to take over and they need to be excised from the body politic and are scum. I mean, I think there's a difference, a qualitative difference in how you present that.
Hussein Rashid, professor of religion at Hofstra University. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.